And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
For a better night's sleep, grab a pen, ballpoint pen with the lid. Grab your foot, finger here, thumb here, pen here. Give it a jab, wake up that pineal gland to release that melatonin, and you're going to sleep like a baby.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, February 16th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling this morning with my top shot hot boy, rocking his new Carhartt, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! We got the international man of mystery taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, is JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe, share. Appreciate all of y'all doing that. Email us your questions and comments for tomorrow's new Beach Steppin' podcast. Yeah, tomorrow's already Wednesday. We'll hit the beach to answer your questions and comments. Get them in. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com or leave them in the YouTube comments or tweet them in. At No Dunks Inc. INC. And as always, great, immaculate items available for sale at nodunks.com. Yeah, Trey's rocking the No Dunks Chicago logo there. That looks
the balls are back!
Yeah, they are, Trey. Oh, Trey.
Had to do a shirt about it.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet, Trey. We'll get to your Bulls later in the show. We got a lot here.
I got enough. I got enough, baby.
Oh, we got so much to talk about. We will get to some of the games from last night, including Trey's Bulls pulling off the victory in overtime. We got a bunch of news. But let's just start with the wedgies, okay? Yeah, the wedgies continue to come fast and furious. Two from one game. First one was a no-brainer wedgie. All right, it was Russell Westbrook coming baseline on a little putback attempt there. Ooh, jammed it in there. Very, very nice. Oh, nice replay, guys. Good stuff. Love this angle. Love an over-the-top-of-the-backboard wedgie
camera. Oh, yeah. There it is.
So that's 21. Now, a little bit later in this game, we get number 22. Or did we? Oh, it's a weird one, guys. This one, I think, is a first. I can't remember ever having a wedgie like this. Rui Hachimura with the jumper. First off, the jumper wedgie from around the free throw line. Now it stops. It wedges. It's there. Whistle is blown. But then the refs get together here and they go, uh-oh, inadvertent whistle. Let's give the ball to the Rockets. So look, we talked about it last night. The team got together and we're counting it. Yeah, we're going to count it because look, the whistle was blown. It definitely wedged in there, Lily. We're showing you wedgietracker.com right now where we have 22. We're on pace for 64. It would be a record of all records. But, Lily, do you have a problem with counting that second one? Again, they said inadvertent whistle, just gave the ball ultimately to the Rockets. But what do you think? Do we make the right call?
Yeah, I think so because you're saying the whistle blew, the game was stopped. The game was paused because of the wedge.
Yes.
It wasn't paused because of a foul or someone stepping out of bounds. It was like, oh, that's a wedgie, whistle blow. Oh, I mean, they didn't stick the landing for sure. But I think all things considered, especially when you consider what our factors and our parameters are for a wedgie, I think, yes, I think overall you have to side on the side of the wedgie. So I'm fine with it.
Okay, hashtag we are wedgie. Trey, you agree ultimately with this decision?
Oh, I 100% agree. I do hate seeing the slow-mo replay where you can clearly see the wedgie falling out of the rim, but like Lee is saying, the game was stopped because the ball was wedged. Did they blow the whistle too soon? Yes, but that's the NBA's problem. That's not our problem.
Right.
You called it perfect as far as I'm concerned, and honestly, many statistics are judgment-based, right? Like, you watch an assist, like somebody's triple-double back, and you're like, that was an assist. He handed the ball to Carmelo Anthony at the three-point line. He dribbled four times, and then he got a layup. How is that an assist for Damian Lillard? It doesn't add up. This is similar. This is our second wedgie, which is controversial. in the least, but we're the ones making the calls, a little home cooking on the scoreboard. Everybody wants to see those big numbers, so we're just going to keep counting them.
Yeah, the Joe Borgia last night for me was I showed Nora. I said, you think we should count this? This is a wedgie. She said, absolutely, that's a wedgie.
Absolutely.
They blew the whistle. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Let's do it. Yeah, and in this crazy season, in 2020-21 season, you know, they've already chopped off 10 games, you know, so we already have less games to work with lately. I think we have to play fast and loose with what we're counting a wedgie. And I don't even think we're going that far with this one because if we're being honest, we've seen the whistle called even quicker for wedgies that were like not even there that long.
Yeah.
As long as that one was the second one in that Wizards Rockets game. So, all right. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. I'm sure we've upset some of the true, you know, wedgie fans out there, but we're counting it. We're at 22 and we're on our way to making history here. We're on pace for 64. That's just unbelievable. All right. So some news, some big names in the trade rumors, or at least being sort of shut down until they're possibly traded. Blake Griffin, guys, we learned yesterday after the show, he is going to sit while the Pistons weigh, again, their trade or buyout options for him. Yeah, Blake Griffin, 2 years ago, all NBA player.
Wow.
This year, not so much. It's rough. He's averaging like 12 points per game, and he just looks like a shell of his former self. So, Trey, I guess my first question with this is, how plausible is it to even trade Blake Griffin if you're the Pistons? I know no contract is untradeable, but how plausible is it?
It's going to be tough, Skeetsy. This whole Blake Griffin thing has been making me feel incredibly old. The man hasn't been a Clipper for a long time at this point. Now he's barely a Piston. He's a holdover from the Stan Van Gundy era in Detroit. And Stan Van Gundy is on his second job since being with the Pistons. Remember, for a little bit, he was doing commentary for Turner. He was getting these tweets off. Now he's coaching the Pelicans. Blake Griffin, not a part of the Troy Weaver, Dwayne Casey era there in Detroit. Sekou Doumbouya, Sadiq Bey, they need a little bit more playing time. So you can understand the Pistons' desires here, but Blake is owed $76 million between this season and next season. He's got a player option next year, considering the fact he doesn't have a dunk yet this season, considering the fact he's shooting under 40% from the field. You have to imagine he's going to be picking up that. The question is, what kind of player is another team going to be getting here? Can Blake Griffin rejuvenate his career a little bit, just hit the glass, rebound, pass the ball, and hit open threes? That to me is a desirable player, but not one that's worth $38 million a season. The Pistons aren't going to want to include any draft picks to try and move this big deal, so it's going to be a buyout. I don't see anybody that's going to be willingly giving up a whole bunch of assets, a whole bunch of contracts for Blake Griffin. He's on such a big deal that it's tough to make it work contract-wise, because you got to add a whole bunch of players to it, and that's a tough ask. If you are a contending team and you're trying to add Blake Griffin as a last piece, you don't want to give up two or three pieces just trying to get Blake Griffin. So it's really tough to find a trade partner for Blake. But once he becomes a buyout guy, once the Pistons and Blake negotiate some sort of deal there and he's able to sign for a small deal, then you're happy to take a flyer on him. Then it's weird to say, it's no different than Nikola Batum, who had a huge deal with the Hornets. That was a disappointment, but now he's on a tiny deal with the Clippers. All they need him to do is do the small things. It's a lot different when you're making $1 million compared to $38 million. A trade, I don't see it happening, but a buyout certainly could be big.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Lee, I'm sure you agree. It's like nearly impossible to figure out an actual trade. Again, I mean, look, we said that before about other guys and it's happened, but this one probably is going the way of a buyout. So let's ask you the question that Trey's setting us up there. If or when he's ultimately bought out here and they agree on a number and both Blake and his obviously reps are happy and the Pistons are happy with it, which team do you think could most use Blake Griffin in a sort of a third or fourth role or maybe even higher? What, do you have your eyes on a team? I know Tass was talking up the Warriors on What You Need to Know this morning, but what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get him to the Blazers earlier in this season, but the problem I found was that contract is just too enormous to be able to trade. So if he is a free agent, the Blazers certainly could use another guy who would be their third option, and I think it would be a very valuable option for them on that team. Now, if you're Blake Griffin, you're looking at the money you're owed and you're like, okay, this is a lot of money. You know, $70-odd million still he's owed. But depending on how much he's prepared to give up, he could then go and join a real contender. I don't think the Blazers are a real contender right now. I think he would improve them. But let's just say You know, I mean, you know, he's not going to the Clippers, okay? He's not going back there, but...
the Lakers.
You know, exactly. Someone like the Lakers where he could really slot in and just maybe even come off the bench for them and just play, you know, 15, 20 minutes a night. And I think he could still thrive in that role because I'm shocked when Trey said he hasn't had a dunk this season because he has, obviously, he's not the same player he was, but he's looked pretty good at some games here, you know? Like, he's been playing well enough that a team like that would be a great boost to have someone like Blake Griffin come off the bench as long as he stays healthy and he accepts that role. So I think he and his team have to look there and think, okay, you know, what's more important here right now? You know, the money, which is huge, or go into a situation where you can actually contend for a championship. Because if you want the championship, then it's probably out there, but the Pistons are probably going to say, well, you're going to have to give back a significant amount of the money that we owe you.
Right.
Exactly what that figure comes to when you're owed so much, who knows? But if I'm Blake Griffin, you know, I think there's going to be no shortage of teams interested in taking him for free, but, or, you know, whatever sort of contract they get him for. But as Trey's saying there, a trade right now, basically when the Pistons have also said we've given up on him, I think is incredibly unlikely.
Yeah. Celtics names being thrown around as a possible landing spot for him. Again, ultimately, if he's bought out, yeah, the Lakers. Yeah, I think Clippers probably unlikely that he would go back there after how that sort of ended. So maybe take them off the board. But a lot of teams that I'm with you guys. I think in the right role, I could see him contributing still. Yeah, Lee, if you've watched him, it's rough. I mean, he has the three-point shot that he had in that All-NBA season, you know, the first year there in Detroit, that he was starting to hit with some consistency, taking a lot. Like, it was like 7 3-point attempts per game. That's just gone. You know, I was talking to some of the Pistons guys on Twitter yesterday. Big part of that is he has no lift. I mean, his legs, his knees are shot. So his, like, his athleticism, forget dunking, like, it's having effect on even just like him raising up. And I said, like, he never had like the, you know, the most fluid looking, he wasn't the most beautiful shooter of the basketball, Lee, I would say. Mm-mm. The way he shot the three when he was hitting it was some consistency. It was pretty flat as it was. Yeah. So now it's even more flat and always hitting the back rim. So, but all that said, you know, I think again, spot minutes, the right team, the right role. Yeah, I'm not ready to like just say like he's washed completely, especially with the playmaker that he is too, as he added to his game over the years. But crazy to see that he's already going to be moving out of Detroit. Like, he's played his last game for the Detroit Pistons.
He's only 31.
I know.
It feels a lot older than that. You know, and the thing is, you know, we knew that that athleticism wasn't going to carry throughout his career, especially when he came in with injuries. And it just happens, you know, every player loses that ability to just explode like he was able to in his first couple of seasons. But if he can really figure out like a Zach Randolph type game, just in the low post, because he's a big, strong guy still and he's athletic, he can be effective just scoring those two-pointers. And then when the threes there, step out and knock it down. So
yeah.
I certainly would be prepared to take a flyer on him. I mean, a no-risk flyer for a guy who could potentially really be a bench impact type of guy. I think there'll be plenty of teams interested in him.
Yeah, for sure. I also got into it with Russ Bankston on Twitter yesterday a little bit. Like, is Blake Griffin a Hall of Famer? Like, if he never played another game right now? Ooh. Like, ever played another game? Because his numbers and accolades are, like, eerily similar to Chris Webber, who obviously is not yet in the Hall. So, I mean, we can table that for now. We don't need to go on a 10-minute
How many All-Star discussion. Games did he end up making?
It's like 5 or 6.
Is that
and wow. All-NBA. He never was a first-team All-NBA, I don't think. I'm talking Blake here, but he made a lot. Yeah, I think maybe 5 off the top of my head. I don't have his basketball reference page open. But yeah, it's he's got, you know, he's got accolades. He's got numbers. I mean, it's there, but it's very Weber-like to me. But yeah, we'll do that maybe on another podcast sometime. All right. Next one, another big guy who's available. Cavaliers, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. They're not going to play Andre Drummond. They're going to try and trade him before the deadline. I guess on yesterday's show, we got the breaking news from Shams, right, Trey?
Mm-hmm.
That there was a possibility of a Raptors-Cavs trade with Drummond. That was maybe in the works, and Woj was pushing back on that a little bit. Well, now the Cavs have come out and said, like, we're just not going to play him. We're doing what we're doing with Blake, and we're going to see what we can get for him here and, like, make sure he doesn't get hurt, I guess, and give more minutes to Jared Allen and stuff like that. So, Lee, it's a tough one to figure out because the Cavs, you know, they took him on for, what, a second-round pick and expiring contracts, the bag of beans, as we called it, to get him from Detroit, Drummond. So what is his trade value now in an expiring deal, playing well, putting up numbers? What do you think with Drummond?
Yeah, that the big question is here, because he's an unrestricted free agent after this season, is a team prepared to give up some sort of significant asset to get him for potentially half a season? And that's the big gamble, because on the court, if you look at the box scores alone, Andre Drummond is a baller, you know, huge numbers, scores, rebounds, gets the steals, gets the blocks, has added some sort of passing game to his game as well. Like, I think he's a pretty versatile player. Those early games here for the Cavs when I was on the old Sexland wagon.
Oh my God, you wear that shirt a lot. Or maybe it just feels that way because we're always seeing that gift.
You know, if they had kept up their winning pace, he was going to the All-Star game again, I think, for
right,
sure.
Right.
I mean, he was putting up those numbers. And he's only 27. So what you know, a team like the Mavericks, for me, need a big guy. They need a big guy to help their defense and their rebounding. I mean, what would the Mavericks give up him? I mean, there's no question they would not, I don't think, give up a first-round pick. It would only be sort of assets that they could move on from. But then, you know, if he's going to be moved and the team's like, listen, we want to take this guy and potentially re-sign him long-term, then they maybe are prepared to give up a little bit more in terms of that asset or a young star player. So it's very difficult. I mean, you're not going to get any commitment out of him anyway, I don't think, for next season. I think he's just going to play it out wherever he goes. And if things go well, then I guess he's likely to give that team the first chance to re-sign him next season. But he's going to get a big contract too. I don't think he's a max guy, but he's going to get paid big because he delivers when he's out there on the court. So there's the potential there, but you just don't know if the risk is worth it for this season. This is not like a Kawhi Leonard Raptors thing where it's like this guy goes and immediately improves the team significantly to win the championship. But, you know, he's a big man. He's an active big man who can rebound, who can defend. And, again, he puts up those numbers on the offensive end. But he's not a great, you know, low post sort of guy who's got all sorts of moves in his book either. Like, he's more like a lot of rebounds, oops, putbacks and things like that. Is he worth a first-round pick? I think it depends on if the team is desperate enough and they think that he can be the changer for them this season. But who's that team? That's the question. I can't really find a team that's prepared to do that myself.
Right. Okay, well, the Mavericks, let's say, I saw this over at, I think it was Bleacher Report, Greg Swartz. The Mavericks, to get Andre Drummond, like you said, he sort of fits a role for them. It makes some sense. You know, they were reeling a little bit. You know, they didn't get off to that hot start. He would help, I think. What would it take? Dwight Powell, James Johnson, and then let's say second round picks. Because I don't know about a first round pick, but maybe two second round picks, 2021 and 2022. Is that something like you think the Cavs would be looking at here in return? Dwight Powell, James Johnson, and then again, these second round picks. Does that intrigue you at all, Lele?
Yeah, I mean the second round picks and Dwight Powell for sure. James Johnson at this part of his career is just there to make the numbers work. Dwight Powell, yeah, I think he's kind of a good, active, younger player that sort of fits their timeline a little bit more. But yeah, you if you can get two picks in return, those second rounders, which basically you gave up one to get him, then that's probably about as good as the offer's going to get. You get the young player, you know, and then you get some draft assets in return. Yeah, there's no. I don't even think the Mavericks have got a first round to give up right now. Yeah, that's right. But certainly a team like the Mavericks could use him because they just need a presence there. They need someone. Porzingis has been okay since he's back, but he's just not that defensive stopper. They need someone. And Andre Drummond's defense could be better for sure, but his presence in terms of just grabbing rebounds, taking a little bit of the heat off Luka for doing that. Luka does a great job rebounding the ball, I think would be important. And then at the other end, running the pick and roll and Drummond would be good for them. He would open up the floor a little bit. So I think the Mavericks do try to get him. It's just what they've got in terms of assets to entice the Cavs.
What do you think, Trey, with Drummond? Do you see a potential trade package with another team? Hell, even your Bulls, would they get involved in Drummond? Is there like an Otto Porter and a second-round pick for AD? I don't know if that's enough either, but what do you think?
Well, Wendell Carter Jr. came back last night, but him and Lauri Markkanen have both had trouble staying on the court for the Bulls. So, I mean, if you're just talking about Otto Porter, another guy who's not on the court quite a bit, sure, I'm in on that because I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be much bigger return for Drummond this year compared to last season. I actually like this suggestion from Darth in the stream team who says Drummond to the Knicks for Frank Ntilikina, Kevin Knox, and a couple of other fillers.
Yeah.
That's not a bad little deal for the Pistons. I mean, for the Cavs, you're not getting a lot of great return, no doubt about it, in Frank Ntilikina and Kevin Knox, but at least they're young players who could potentially grow into something. They're playing with the Cavs, playing fast, just running up and down the court. I don't know about the deal with the Mavericks. I don't know that the Cavs are going to want to bring in another big guy when they're trading away two of their big guys after they just traded for a big guy. So for them, I'm looking for somebody that could potentially help in the future on the wing. I know they got Isaac Okoro there in the draft this year, but they still need another guy. So I don't know. Of the random suggestions you're seeing right now of an actual trade, I don't mind this one for the Knicks, just because it's a couple of guys who have not had great starts to their NBA career, but sometimes you just need a little change of scenery to bounce back, because Drummond, I think he needs to be on a team that is trying to go from mediocre to good. That's kind of what the Cavs were doing. They got out of Drummond exactly what they needed. Hopefully they can bring an asset back, but it helped establish Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, right? Gave him a pick and roll partner, gave him somebody that can help on the glass inside, somebody that can sometimes help a little bit with the playmaking duty, but Drummond isn't contributing a ton to wins. Somehow he's shooting under 50% despite being one of the biggest, most athletic guys in the rim, or most athletic guys in the league. So if he ends up being bought out, something that hasn't been really discussed yet, I could see him working out okay on a team like the Warriors. If Draymond Green says, hey man, all you're doing is rolling to the basket. Roll to the basket every single time. Be James Wiseman, because Drummond really gets into trouble when he's trying to be a playmaker, when he's trying to do too much. On a good team, he hopefully has to do very little besides just rebound and roll to the rim and try and be at the rim on defense. But on a team that's going from, you know, play-in tournament to trying to make the playoffs, you're asking a little bit more, and you're asking a little bit more from Andre Drummond. Let's see how that goes.
Well, you brought up Draymond Green there. Lee, I wanted to get your opinion on Draymond Green's comments, his post-game comments last night, because he just went on like a, I don't know, it was like a 2.5, 3-minute rant, basically, about the what he's calling the NBA's double standard when it comes to, like, sitting these guys down, the organization with Blake Griffin and the Pistons with him, and then the Cavs with Andre Drummond. And, like, that's fine. That's no big deal. But, you know, James Harden or Anthony Davis, guys that request trades, sort of just get raked across the media, right, and fans and stuff like that. And why don't we do that with the teams? Again, we don't have the clip for you, but hopefully you guys can go watch it. But you saw it. What do you think? What do you make of Draymond Green's again pretty epic rant there?
Yeah, I mean, he's got some points there. It depends. The reporting on Andre Drummond was that apparently he didn't want to sit out. You know, the team basically said, "We're giving your minutes to Jared Allen, and we're going to move on from you. So we don't want you to get injured. We want to keep your trade value high." And so he's saying, but the team is now expecting you to stay professional, stay ready, and to do all the right things. Whereas James Harden in Houston, and Draymond Green acknowledges, you know, he dogged it his last few games and days there in Houston, you know, didn't look in great shape, didn't play well, and then called out the team. But he's claiming that the circumstances are basically the complete opposite in terms of one time you've got the player saying, "I want out," and then you've got the franchise saying to a guy, "We're getting rid of you, so we're going to move on from you," and that's the double standard, and that people will jump on James Harden and say, "That's unprofessional what you did," but the league or the team, the Cavs, get a pass for just saying, "Well, we're going to move on from him, so we're not playing for him." So,
and he also brought up like the mental health aspect of what that could do to a player.
Yeah,
like Drummond, he's saying, or anyone, right? Like suddenly a team saying, "No, we just don't want you to play. And you're going to be moved, and we'll just figure it out." And, like, you know, the effect that can have on a guy. He brought that up as well. Yeah.
You know, he's got a point. I think Andre Drummond, I haven't seen him playing as badly as James Harden sort of did, because James Harden's sort of attitude on the floor and just the shape he looked in, which was incredible how he just seemed to lose that weight as soon as he put on a Brooklyn Nets uniform. It was a crazy transformation. But Drummond is different because he's been kind of playing, but the team has been sucking lately. They've gone on a terrible losing streak here. So, you know,
Drummond's playing for a contract, man.
Yeah, he is. But Harden, I think his anger is really more towards the fans rather than the league. I think, because fans were the ones who really jumped on James Harden more so than the league. I mean, the league didn't really step in and do anything. It was more just James Harden was like, "I want out of here, and unless you trade me, I'm just going to really sulk my way out of it," and eventually got his deal done. So, whereas Andre Drummond, it's basically like, you know, we always hear it's a business. And it's like, listen, don't be loyal to a team because they'll get rid of you as soon as they can if they don't feel you're providing value to the team. And that's kind of what the Cavs are doing right now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Trey, of Draymond's comments?
I mean, I don't know. It's a it is a double standard between teams and players. You know, a fan always wants the team to do the right thing. A fan always wants the team to do exactly what they can to make the team better, and that's really all they care about. They care about the players while they're there, but when a player asks out, you're like not a part of the team anymore, right?
Right, right.
When you wear a farewell shirt to your last game as a Detroit Piston, I guess you're not quite as a part of the team, which is why Jerry Seinfeld said to not root for laundry, right? That's exactly why. So that's just the way it is. If you're a fan of a team, you want all the players to want to be there, but if you are on a team, you also, you know, it's not just money that's going to keep you happy. You want to be playing for a championship. Look at Andre Drummond. He's played on bad teams for the entirety of his career. Now he wants to try and win a championship. They're telling him he's out of the plans for Detroit. For Cleveland. Yeah, he's out of the plans for Detroit as well. Who knows at this point? They're the exact same team. Really, they're both Eastern Conference Central Division foes who have been struggling in the 2020s. But I don't know. There are good ways to handle a trade request because, you know, when Kevin Garnett finally wanted out of Minnesota, Minnesota Timberwolves fans were happy for him. He gave it his all there. He tried to win a championship, but there are poor ways to handle a trade request as well, which we have seen time and time and time again. Yeah. So there's no way to make everybody happy when you're trying to get away from a team. It's just who you're okay with making upset.
Yeah. Again, highly recommend you go find the clip of Draymond Green talking to the media last night. I'm not even sure he was asked a question about it. I think he just like wanted to talk about it because they had just been playing the Cavaliers, and he said he saw Drummond obviously was like going through the motions, getting his workout in pregame, and then went back and changed into street clothes because he wasn't going to be playing in the actual game, which is weird. It there is no doubt weird, especially when the guy wants to play. Like you were saying, Lee, it sounds like Blake and his reps with the Pistons have come to a very mutual agreement of like, okay, let's not play, let's figure this out, let's come to an agreement. It's likely going to be a buyout, so they're just going to be figuring out the number value, whereas the Drummond thing is a little more like, no, I sort of want to keep playing, I'm playing well. I mean, he was in the All-Star, you know, conversation for sure until they went on this really really cold patch, and there's just so many good players obviously in the Eastern Conference bigs that he's probably not going to make it, but like he was going to be on his way there. So very weird, but again, check out Draymond Green's comments. Let's hear what you guys think, too, in the stream team, and let us know in the YouTube comments. All right, next one here. Big man, Anthony Davis. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks with that calf strain, Trey. Yeah, we got the sort of the MRI back, and he's at least going to be down for a couple weeks. Not really surprising, right?
Not really surprising. Looked like a bad injury anytime. Well, it didn't look like a bad injury, but you don't like to see somebody immediately grab down at their Achilles right after, right? I mean, the good thing with Anthony Davis, as we found out, it wasn't a tear. He didn't go down rolling on the ground, the usual Achilles stuff. But when you see a guy reaching back there, you assume the worst. Nonetheless, the big thing from this is that the Lakers aren't getting the one seed this year. The Jazz have been too good. Anthony Davis in the first place has not been George Mikan this season. He's been top 15 in the league more so than like a top five. The Lakers have been sleeping their way to wins, but they have been winning these games, but they've been playing close games. And it helps when you can throw out Anthony Davis in the fourth quarter, somebody who's going to help you get stops every single time down when you actually need it. Obviously, with no Anthony Davis there, it's going to be a lot harder without their defensive anchor. Kuzma has been good this season. He'll do a good job in a little bit bigger role. Gasol, Montrezl Harrell, THT will all get a little bit more time. They're still going to be a good team. They're just not going to be the Lakers that we saw last season. They're not even going to be the Lakers that we saw this season. So to me, it's okay for LeBron to take a little bit of a step back here if I'm the Lakers. It would hurt his MVP chances, but the guy is playing 38 minutes per game in February. I'm not one of those people who thinks that LeBron's going to get tired in the playoffs because he's playing a lot in February, but it seems to me like it would kind of be pointless to be chasing after the one seed, knowing how well the Jazz are playing and how little seeding actually matters to the Lakers. Mm. As long as they're healthy come playoff time, they're going to be the favorites in the Western Conference. They're going to be able to win a game in Utah, right? They're going to be able to win a game in Denver if they absolutely need to. The season, the regular season, doesn't matter for the Lakers outside of getting healthy and LeBron potentially winning MVP. So those two things are kind of at odds with each other because now would be a great time to go on a run if you're LeBron. You know, play 40 minutes a game, average a triple-double for a month. Those are things that really cement your lead as the MVP candidate, but I don't know if that's exactly what they're going to want to do because it's all about the ring when it comes down to it.
Yeah, the other only thing I would add to this is with the All-Star game, Lee, I wonder what the coaches do with Anthony Davis. Like, I think he would have been a no-brainer still as an All-Star selection, right, from the coaches, even though he's having, like, not a great year for himself, but he's still, like, like Trey said, he's still, you look at him, and he's like, yeah, the guy's still top 15 in the league, even at his worst. But will, because of this injury, will they take a pass on him? Or will they just name him and then there obviously will be a replacement? So this is good news for one of those fringe all-star candidates, I think, in the West to ultimately either just get selected because they overlook AD, which again I think is unlikely, or more likely, you know, Commissioner Silver in the NBA picking an injury replacement. That's good news for like an SGA, maybe, like all a right, Fox, right. Stuff like that. You know, I think it helps their chances, right?
Yeah. I think they'd probably just go ahead and pick him anyway, knowing that it doesn't really matter. Too. You know, the coaches, the commissioner does make that choice if there is an injury replacement. It's interesting. I mean, I guess he's a lock too. I mean, he's putting up moderate numbers by his standards, but it's the Lakers. They're coming off a championship, and he was incredible down there in the bubble, particularly there in the finals. So I think it's sort of that respect vote that gets him in more so than his actual play this season, because I think I had him as MVP. I mean, he's nowhere near MVP right now, but I think when you have those standards set so high, seeing a guy only returning 22-8, you feel like it's bad. I mean, they're still very, very impressive numbers. It's just he hasn't quite sort of taken the step that I was hoping. But the thing for me, this injury, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully he's back, of course. But just when you hear calf and Achilles together, I'm just like, oh, I just don't like hearing that word, you know. I hope all it is a calf strain and they take as long as they need to get him back, because it just sort of feels a little bit like the Kevin Durant situation there, you know, where it was like calf, Achilles, and it's like they kind of rushed him back and it blew up in their face for Golden State. So obviously we don't want to see anything like that for Anthony Davis. And he's a big guy. He's had some injuries in the past. He's been pretty good the last couple of seasons, actually. But Achilles, that word right now. I mean, obviously Klay Thompson's out as well. And, you know, several guys have been affected by it. So I just hope that it's nothing more serious than just sort of extended rest / precaution at this stage.
Yeah, for sure. We're not seeing AD in a Lakers uniform until, let's call it mid-March, probably. Yeah. You know, maybe at the earliest, but and that's probably the right play. I mean, you're not gonna go crazy with him having to be out there. Like Trey said, they don't really probably care about the one seed. Let the Jazz run away with it. You're probably gonna have to play the Clippers maybe just in a round earlier, right? If they end up on the same side and they end up playing each other. So we'll see. All right, final piece of news. Just quickly, yesterday, Devin Booker and the Pistons rookie Sadiq Bey were named the Western and Eastern Conference Players of the Week by the NBA. Now, Booker, he averaged 32 points per game, 5 assists, 5 boards. Suns stayed perfect in the week, 4-0. Okay, Devin Booker. I think it might be his first player of the week, which is a little surprising. I guess the Suns don't win a lot of games, so maybe it's not. Anyway, he got his. Meanwhile, Bey, yes, Pistons rookie, Sadiq Bey, he averaged just 17.8 points per game and 5.5 rebounds for the Pistons. They had a good week. They went 3-1. And records are really, really important with these players of the week, and this is just the NBA's like criteria. They just want to give it to like a guy that's obviously putting up decent numbers on a winning team from that particular week. But those are not amazing numbers. if we're just being honest, I'm happy for him. He had one monster game, right? He had that 30-point game. He hit 7 threes. And then the rest was just, you know, average, but good for a rookie. But here he is getting this, and you're like, what's going on? Why? Well, I think the reason is it was a rough week for all the top Eastern Conference teams, like the Bucks and the Sixers and the Nets and the Celtics. Like, they just had average or, you know, below average weeks in terms of winning games. And I think your boy Terry Rozier would have gotten it, Lee, had the Hornets beaten the Spurs on Sunday. So I like to know that the NBA is not a Lee Ellis, and they don't do just a that'll do. They actually say, no, we're not going to give it to the Hornets and Terry Rozier, who went 2-2 after that loss to the Spurs, though he had great numbers. And they like tried to like go find a guy that was contributing on a winning team in the week, and they went with Bey. But I think Rozier would have had this if they had beaten the Spurs on Sunday.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, he had 74 points in the last two games on the Friday and Sunday, but of course only one was in a victory. But,
yeah, because he would have been, if they had beaten the Spurs, he would have been 3-1, the Hornets, and he would have had much more impressive numbers than Sadiq Bey. So anyway, It's pretty rare for a rookie to get a player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And again, especially on a team like the Pistons, that is a team that's been bad all season, you would sort of think they would throw a bone to someone else. But let's get hot and heavy over the players of the week.
Come on, you must be crazy. This is an ultimate bone throw. This is an ultimate that'll do. This is Sadiq Bey. You had a great week. You might not get another award in your NBA career. We're throwing you a bone right now. Yeah. Enjoy this. Enjoy the player of the week. We're talking about Sadiq Bey, guys. Sadiq Bey.
Yeah.
What did the Bulls do in last week? Did they go 2-2 or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Zach LaVine probably would have been close, too, if they get one more win. You just had to have a 3-1 record by the looks of it. And I don't think a lot of Eastern Conference teams had that Piston streak there. So,
that's right. Hey, Mason Plumlee also had a triple double.
Oh, yeah.
This was a big week for the Pistons.
Big, big week, for sure.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's get to some of the games from last night. Some good ones. Lee, first one, Jordan Clarkson. My God. Goes for 40 off the bench in the Jazz victory versus Ben Simmons, who played phenomenal without Joel Embiid and the 76ers. What's your big takeaway from this one?
Well, yeah, Jordan Clarkson was incredible coming off the bench. He's been very good this season. He's the second leading scorer there on the Jazz, and this was his line here last night. He finished with 13 for 20 from the field, 8 for 13 from 3, 40 points, 1 assist, 2 steals. That's what he did. Not a rebound there at all for Jordan Clarkson. But no, he's been great. And again, I know we've talked about a lot coming in to the offseason. It's like they paid him the 4 years, $52 million. I thought, that's a lot for a guy who just gives you shooting. And some of that shooting is a bit irrational at times. But this year, it's been great. And it's been so important for Utah to have that guy who literally comes off the bench and says, I'm firing away, because he only played 29 minutes last night. And the Jazz had to actually come back from a big deficit from the Sixers, who were without Joel Embiid last night. Joel Embiid was a late scratch due to back tightness. And Ben Simmons had a career high, 42 points. And if you look at his shot chart, every single made basket, no surprise, is virtually from within the paint. 15 for 26 from the field and 12 assists. But it just got me really puzzled, like, and Ben Simmons has actually been playing pretty well for the last 10 or 11 games, scoring the ball a lot more. But against one of the best defenses in the league, he just was relentless attacking the paint and scoring. Why don't we see a little bit more of that from him? That's the frustrating part for me. It's like, you know, because it's not like, well, Joel Embiid was out, so that's the only reason he was doing it. It's like he uses his speed. He can get inside. He's virtually unblockable when he's going up and matched up against the other team's guard, because he can jump high and release those floaters and hook shots and layups. And it's like, you know, sometimes you see Ben Simmons take like 3 shots for a game, 4 shots. Mm-hmm. It's like, why isn't he more aggressive like that in more games? I think that's a very important factor for the Sixers, because they've dropped 3 in a row now on a rough West Coast trip for them. But it just feels to me that Ben Simmons, who's actually averaging a career low in points this season, really should be closer to 20 points a game. He can easily get there, I think. So I wonder if this will be maybe the kickstart of something else, or if he'll just settle back into that role. He said he's been taking care of his mental health and his mental approach. And last night, I mean, he was super aggressive just going inside.
Mm-hmm. So he also hit his free throws last night.
Yeah. It's like 42 points fairly easily against a very good defensive team last night. So I hope we see a bit more of that, a bit more aggressive Ben Simmons trying to score the ball. Because the one thing he does that he's kind of gotten rid of a little bit from his game, still does it from time to time, is he goes into the paint and he jumps and he's not looking to score at all. He's looking for that pass off. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're that close. You've got that soft touch. Finish those off a little bit more. So, good game. Jazz win again.
Entertaining. Jazz won 19-20. Trey, 8 straight now. Their role, and I actually got a little trivia question for you guys. You want to play off of the Clarkson? Eight threes.
Want to play a game?
Yeah, 8 threes. Can you name the other Jazz players to hit 8 threes in a game?
Jeff Hornacek.
That's correct.
Donovan?
No, that's a surprise one. Yeah, you know all these guys. One guy currently plays for them, so that's a
Joe Ingles?
No, not Joe.
Bogdanovich?
Bogdanovich, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we got two that are, one guy still playing in the league, one guy not. I don't know where this guy is. He's a fun name. He was a high draft pick. You forget maybe that he played for the Jazz, but get the guy that plays right now. He got paid this offseason despite having an injury, actually, coming off an injury. And everyone was like, whoa. All right, good.
Despite having an injury.
Yeah, no. a wing guy, plays in another Western Conference team, a good Western Conference team, not elite, but you just don't talk about this guy often. It's all good in the...
Rodney Hood.
It's all good in the Rodney Hood.
Yeah, Rodney Hood.
I love it.
And then this one. This one's the fun one. You probably think of this guy as a Minnesota Timberwolf.
Randy Foy.
Wow. Nice pull, Trey.
I do think of him as a Timberwolf.
Yeah. Wasn't he a very high draft pick?
Yeah, he was a top 10 guy for sure.
Yeah. There you go. Those are the five guys now when you add Clarkson in the mix. Horny, Hood, Foy, and Bogdanovich. Only Utah Jazz players that eat threes in a game, at least in the regular season.
But you nailed it, Lee. This was an entertaining, up and down, fun game. You know, no Embiid certainly helps, but this Jazz team, they're built different than most of these Jazz teams. For the past couple of seasons, it's been, we're going to play defense, we're going to be a great defensive team, and maybe we'll score enough to be able to beat you. Last night, they said, who cares about defense? We're completely outscoring you. I'm not joking. You wouldn't get this from the Jazz very often, right? Mm-hmm. They're great defensively. They're second in the league. But last night, it was just pickup ball. They were just running and gunning for the entirety of the game. Royce O'Neal hit a couple of nice fourth quarter threes. I think you see Ben Simmons scoring 40 as part of the reason that you can tell that this was not a defensive game. This was the Jazz coming out and saying, we're going to try and score 140 points.
Yeah.
They got really close, and that's not what you expect from the Jazz. So, I don't know. I am reevaluating them every single night that I see them play, and I'm seeing them tick up and up and up and up in the standings here in my personal rankings. So, yeah, I mean, if the Jazz are going to completely flip the script and be an incredible offensive team for the entirety of the year, if they're going to be an offense-first team, I can talk myself into the Jazz. But also I can talk myself into the takes that we're going to start hearing once we get close to playoff time. Did the Jazz have another gear?
Oh, wow.
Did the Jazz have what it takes?
Did they peak too soon? I can't wait for that.
Oh, yeah. You started hearing it on the broadcast last night. Don't want to be playing your best ball in February. No. That's facts. No. But they look different. They look different. I like it.
I also just love that saying because it's like, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to play worse? Like, should we just start fumbling the ball away? Hey, we don't want to play our best ball in February. We want to play. So let's just start like pretending we forget how to play basketball. It's just such a funny line. Though there is some truth to it. It just means if you're going to pick the time to play your best, make sure it is come playoff time. But they're rolling right now, Lee. And yeah, every game I watch them, you become more convinced that it's not like just some, by no means now at this point, some lucky streak or something like that. Like Trey said, they're winning some games just shooting lights out. We'll play all offense. And then they still have that awesome defense that won them the game the other night when it was that ugly affair with the Heat. So they're damn good. I mean, they're not going to be an easy out. I mean, they were up 3-1 against the Nuggets who went to the conference finals last year, right? I mean, they had that series in the bag. And then, you know, kudos to Denver for coming back. But, like, it's a different story if they take care of them in five and then whatever happens in the next round. But Jazz are for real.
And they didn't have Bogdanovich down there, and I think he makes a big difference to them. I mean, again, you're 3-1 up, you should close out the series anyway. Yeah. But also, Joe Ingles, I mean, he's been filling in for Conley in the starting lineup. He's been great. Every single game, there's a beautiful play that Ingles and Rudy Gobert run where, you know, they often do a lot of pick and rolls with each other. And then you see the defense waiting for that pick and roll, and Joe just cruises in for a gorgeous little left-hand layup. It happens every game, but it's almost like a Kyle Anderson slow-mo left-handed layup, but it happens. But again, the chemistry that they've got together with that team, that continuity, I think you're starting to see that pay off because these guys have been together for a few seasons now. So I think that's the benefit of staying with those teams and not blowing it up after what happened last season. They didn't fire the coach. You know, they gave Rudy the big contract. So they said, listen, we think this is the right team. We just got to play better than we did in closing out a series.
Yeah, brought Favors back and that unlocked everything. He's played great for them, obviously, in a backup role. I mean, we've been joking about LeBron and the MVP narrative, like it's over, Trey, you know, Vogel saying it's his and can anybody catch him and all that. And it's still very much in play, I think. I don't know about Sixth Man of the Year. I think that might be a wrap. I think Clarkson is legit running away with it. I'd be shocked if he doesn't win it. And Quinn Snyder maybe as Coach of the Year too. I mean, if they have the number one seed in the West, no one saw that. I mean, people were were high on the Jazz. People still believed in the Jazz, but number one seed, but you know, possibly by a mile. If they're there, I think he would win that award, and especially with how he's sort of unlocked them offensively and shooting a bunch more threes too. I think you get that little bit of a storyline, always helps your case. So Clarkson, probably no brainer. You know, obviously tons of season left here for Quinn Snyder to maybe get Coach of the Year. All right, next game. Let's keep it going here. Julius Randle scores 44 points. Yeah, 44 as the Knicks beat the slumping Hawks. 123-112. Oh my God, Atlanta. Atlanta's a mess right now. But let's focus on the Knicks. Timing is everything when it comes to the All-Star game, right? When it comes to the coaches' selections, man. And Randle, good timing right now, what he's doing. The 44, career best 7 3-pointers in this game. He was special, you know, chipping in the boards and assists as well. He's had great numbers all year long. The Knicks are winning. They're nearly at 500. The Knicks, if they beat the Magic, I think, on Wednesday, are at 500. This is the New York Knicks. Like, this is something to celebrate here. But this is good timing because I tweeted it last night. I wanted to get your take, Trey and Lee. I feel like three of these guys are probably not going to make the All-Star game in the Eastern Conference. Three of these four guys, Sabonis, Vucevic, Gordon Hayward, and Julius Randle. Now, maybe it's just two, but I think it's very possible that three of those names I just said are not there. So my point is, hey, Randle, good timing. Like, for all these guys, hey, if you want to get in this game, ramp it up now. Because Sabonis, remember, he was a lock. Like, we were like, this guy was in the MVP conversation through the first, like, 2 or 3 weeks. And we were like, yeah, he's an all-star lock again. I'm not so sure now with the way they've fallen off a little bit. His numbers have come back to earth. And it's like, again, it's like, it's just funny. You could have the exact same numbers, two guys, but if you had your really good month in the first month and the other guy had his really good month in the second month or closer to the All-Star game selections, more likely they're going to go with that guy. Do you know what I mean? If the records are comparable and all that. But what do you think about those four names and just Randle, the way he's playing, Trey?
Well, you don't want to be playing your best basketball in February, Skeets.
You do if you want to make the All-Star
But team. You do if you're making the All-Star team, because DeMontis Sabonis, he's slowing down a little bit. Yeah. You know, we talk about his great start. It was basically the first week of the season, and we all remember it because he was averaging a triple-double. He was incredible, but you're starting to see the Pacers' lack of playmakers on the outside, on the perimeter, take their toll on Sabonis. He's not able to dominate every single matchup every single night. Takes the right sort of a defender for him to really dominate. So I could see him missing it, but I don't see Julius Randle missing the game at all. I mean, with the way the Knicks are playing, with how well he has played from the start of the season till now, he's putting up, able to get close to his career highs. And the Knicks look like a resurgent team. People are excited for the Knicks to be back. They're even more back than the Bulls. I can't believe I just said it, but it's true. But it's true. They're getting an all-star. And I think that you want a New York Knicks all-star there rather than a Gordon Hayward, rather than a DeMontis Sabonis. And who's the other guy?
Vucevic,
certainly. I mean, he has just the same case, basically, that a Zach LaVine would, Nick Vucevic does, that Gordon Hayward, a similar case where you're the best player on a team that's really just trying to get into the play-in tournament. But right now, I would say Randle is the lockiest of those four. I don't know that necessarily any of those is 100% sure a lock, because we still got a few weeks here, but I think Randle is in the lead amongst those four guys.
Yeah, what do you think, Lee? You agree with that? You're the biggest Knicks fan I know.
Randle for me is a lock. He's putting up like incredible numbers there, not just shooting and rebounding, but putting up 5.5 assists a game as well, but shooting the ball incredibly well, 47% from the field, and then 40% from three. So he's doing a lot, and the Knicks are back in terms of where the Knicks have been the last few years, for sure.
You know what Julius Randle's doing right now? He's having the Blake Griffin year from 2 years ago with the Detroit Pistons. Right. That's what's going on. Yeah.
But if you look strictly at numbers, Vooch is basically putting up the same points and rebounds as Randle, but his team is 10-18 below the Atlanta Hawks. So that counts against Vucevic, I think. I think he might miss out simply because the Magic had a hot start, but they have really bottomed out as well. As far as Gordon Hayward, I think he's probably more of a lock than, not a lock, but more likely to get in than Sabonis at the moment, because he's been so good for the Hornets. And they're also winning. They're a couple of games below 500, and the Pacers are at 500. So he might just get that, you've been doing great bump, you know, whereas Sabonis puts up solid numbers and he's a solid player, but he doesn't do the sort of highlight reels, the standout stuff And Gordon Hayward doesn't do lots of highlight stuff, but he's been clearly the Hornets' best player and been very effective. So I think right now, yes, Randall is.
So if you're ranking
sure.
them, it sounds like you have Randall, then it sounds like you have Hayward, yes. then Sabonis and Vooch, because you hate Vooch.
I do get lots of hates for Vooch. He's been good this season, no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. But again, the point that I've always made is, you know, he's putting up 23-11, when, you know, if you're putting up 20-10, you're playing well, but his team is 10-18, so I'm not sure how impactful that is to his team winning.
Right.
That's my
Can we
point.
Say the same with Trae Young?
We could say the same with Trae Young. Yeah, I mean, but you know, like anytime Vooch has a numbers, I get these tweets and people saying, you know, you still hate him, and I'm like, listen, I had Vooch in the All-Star game before anyone else did, like 5 years ago, you know,
I was on
Vooch Island way back in the day, and people were like, why are you on Vooch Island? And I'm like, I'm having a great time. And then I caught a boat out of there. I went to Wiggins Island, but I just, you know, my point about Vooch is, yes, he's a very reliable, consistent player, nice mid-range game and all that. You know, he just gets those numbers, but the Magic don't really, it doesn't move the needle all that much for the Magic.
Yeah.
Listen,
sure.
if he makes the All-Star game, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be crying and starting to fight anyone. Right. I just feel that what Gordon Hayward has done for the Hornets this season, it's like, wow, he came in with that huge contract. What are you doing, Hornets? And the Hornets have been playing. They've had other factors, of course, but I think he's been their best player and would be their only All-Star if they get one.
Okay. Yeah, I think Randall's, sure, again, timing is everything with this, and he's coming on. He's had an awesome year, and the victories are piling up for the Knicks, being 14-15. You know, RJ Barrett had, I thought, a really good game last night. Quickly, I mean, God, this guy, 16 for the Knicks as well as the Rook, so he was solid.
You can see why his favorite player was Lou Williams, man. Emmanuel
Quickly. Yeah, oh yeah. For sure.
He's just like, this is my shot, this is my time, and it's great. It's not the prettiest shot in the world, but he believes in it, so go for it.
It's a good thing there's no rookie game this All-Star weekend, or he'd be at Magic City getting some wings. Yeah, not yet. we'll see with Randall, man. I hope he does make it. That was impressive. You had already mentioned Zach Randolph, I think, in this podcast, Lee, because you were saying maybe Blake can sort of mold into that in his later stages of his career here over the next couple. But I just keep thinking every time I watch Julius Randle, that would be Zach Randolph if he came into the league a decade later. You know what I mean? Like shooting more threes, maybe a little bit more in shape physically. But there's I know it's the lefty thing and all that, but there's some similarities. It's just like the next generation of a Zach Randolph. So happy to see Randall playing well. And you saw probably after the game, Tass had it on What You Need to Know, the podcast today, the mini recap. Like the guys, the Knicks guys, going to bat for him, right? Like this guy's an all-star. He should be in there. That helps. That does. And I always think when it comes to the coaches, because we've talked about this before, are they more likely just to go, Sabonis, he was already an all-star. Okay, put him back in. Vooch was already an all-star at one point. You know, put him back in. Maybe even Hayward too in the West. Or are they this year, everybody's so close. We shouldn't maybe even have the game as it is. Let's give it to the new guy. Do you know what I mean? Like that little sort of fresh take there. Let's go with the Randall here. I can't decide which one the coaches might do more in this very weird pandemic season. Anyway, so maybe if you got an opinion on that, let me know. We'll see. Soon enough, we're going to make our picks too. There's a whole reason to that. We're going to make our All-Star picks on Friday on the Drop podcast. So start thinking, Lee. Find a way to get Vooch back in there, man.
I want to find the clip when I had him on the island and no one else did. I want to just see that. So
oh, my goodness. Oh, going deep in the archives.
I remember
that you liked a guy who could shoot an 18-footer. I remember Matty O was like, oh, Vooch Island? I know exactly where it is. Because he was trying to convince us that the Magic logo on the court was the Vooch Island, the one that's on the wing where Vooch shoots a ton of 19-footers before he shot three-pointers. Ridiculous stuff. Come on, Leah. I don't care if you were on Vooch Island. What are you doing on Vooch Island, man? What are you doing over there?
I just want to show that to the people who think that I'm just a born hater. I'm like, yeah, bro, I was there,
born
man.
Born hater.
Yeah,
born hater.
I think, when I see Orlando games this year, it's like, that. He's money from that mid-range. There's no doubt about it. But they're 10-18, so...
Right. Okay. We'll get into the Hawks probably later this week, but they are missing DeAndre Hunter. My God. Some defense. They give up the most points in the fourth quarter. They just can't stop anyone down the stretch. What's going on with John Collins, of course? That's still, the rumors are picking up a little bit more on that. Are they going to move him? They visit the Celtics this week, and it's like one of those little baseball back-to-backs here on Wednesday and Friday. So this could get worse for Atlanta before it gets better. They are reeling right now. Final game. Trey, had to slip it in here for you, big guy. Bulls run past the Pacers. Late flurry there in overtime. 120-112. Yeah, the 8-point victory in OT. What's your big takeaway from this one?
Oh, no surprise, Skeets. The Bulls are back.
Oh, yeah.
I told Laura, you know what? The Bulls can't lose to the Pacers if they're back. And for the first time in 5 years, the Bulls won in Indiana. This was an ugly one. This was an ugly, scrappy win for the Bulls. Part of it was the Bulls' defense. You know, I thought Zach LaVine was pretty engaged on the defensive end, but part of it was the Pacers just could not make a layup. Sabonis and Turner went a combined 9 for 29 on the night. Some of it certainly was defense, but they also just looked pretty tired, and they were just chucking the ball at the rim. That was some ugly stuff, but Zach LaVine, 30 points, another 30-point game for him. He's up to 28 a game, sixth in the league. He had a massive three with 30 seconds left. Did miss one at the buzzer, a tough shot at regulation, but he gave the effort defensively. He was there in overtime. He's an all-star lock. You're seeing him show up on a bunch of people's reserve lists now. I think that the conversation has moved past Zach LaVine, honestly. Like, we're talking about, is Julius Randle an all-star now? Is Domantas Sabonis an all-star? LaVine seems like he's in to me right now, but it wasn't just Zach LaVine. A team win, no doubt, for the Bulls. 13-11-4 from Thaddeus Young. Stacey King was calling him Thaddeus Johnson the way he was setting the table out there. It's honestly easing the load a little bit on LaVine. It's asking less from Kobe White, who had a nice game, eight assists, didn't turn the ball over in the second half. Garrett Temple hit a big three in the fourth quarter, 16 points. And my guy, top shot, Tomas Satoransky, 13 points, four assists, steady play. Pump my bags. Thomas Satoransky is back. Wendell Carter Jr. returned after an absence. He brought the muscle. Kobe was great. This is one of the best wins of the season for the Bulls. The Pacers, despite the fact that they're struggling, are a legitimate playoff team in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. You know, they're certainly ahead of the Bulls. So to be able to go into Indiana and actually win a game there for the first time in 5 years, like I was saying, unbelievable that that was the case, that the Bulls hadn't beat the Pacers. I mean, the Bulls have been bad, but the Pacers haven't been world beaters, you know? No. They haven't been the greatest team. They've been a good team. So, yeah, to go there, to make to win a game that was an ugly game, to win a game when you're not just scoring 140 points and blowing out the other team or getting super hot from the field, I thought was really impressive.
That Zach LaVine three over Sabonis.
Oh, with nasty.
Like 27 seconds. I mean, Sabonis played that perfectly, I thought, for like a big guy being switched. I mean, it was they allowed the switch too easy, but still, Sabonis was right there on the smaller LaVine, challenged the shot, and like Zach just fading away, splashed
great.
It. That put them up. And then I guess Zach LaVine had a chance to win it at the end of regulation. I tweeted at you, Trey. I was like, oh man, I wish he had stopped and popped and just went straight up a little bit more. He like did a super drift, and he obviously didn't hit it. But then came through, still in overtime and got some help, like you said, from Temple. I know he hit a little pull up there early, and then Thad was helping on the glass, and Denzel Valentine chipped in. So good win. I'm with you. You know, not the prettiest game, but I was into it down the stretch. Anytime you get a close one, Brogdon had a weird, like fumbling, stumbling, bumbling, tie up, and I was like, what's going on in this game? But good win. Bulls are back. Everybody knows it. And just the other games, Beal outdueled Wall. The Wizards topped the Rockets 131-119. Steph Curry, 36 points as the Warriors dealt the Cavs their eighth straight loss. Marcus Morris, good win for the Clippers without their big star players, 125-118 over the Heat. And then Kyrie in the late game scored 40. Harden had a triple-double. The Nets hit, I think, 27 three-pointers against the Kings. No Kevin Durant, of course, but they still got it done. So big game from their two superstars there. Great stuff. Okay, we'll get to Tweet of the Night. JD has the honor. But first, Lee. Oh, man, you must love this ad read. Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
JD, Tweet of the Night on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. I didn't realize till this morning when I jumped into the dock that I had Tweet of the Night duties. So, you know, it was 5 o'clock this morning. I dove into my feed trying to find a tasty NBA nugget to, share and have some larfs. But I got distracted. I got distracted by this that kept popping up.
Oh,
yeah.
Have you guys seen this?
Yeah.
Random line from a movie that fans of it instantly no. Okay, so I'm like, okay, I'm into this because I love trivia and I love movies, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be great at this. And I sucked really badly. So I grabbed the
So what do you mean you sucked? You were reading people's
So yeah,
tweets,
they post their lines. They post the picture. And it's hard to find, too, because there's no hashtag. It's not it's not trending or whatever. So I just grabbed them. I just like was going deep, deep, deep into my feed looking for them, trying to find one that I could get. Could mm-hmm. not get a single one. So I grabbed the four that I found. And I just wanted to see if it was just me or if I'm old or if I'm sleep deprived. I just want to see if you guys can get these because I could not. And keep in mind, I've seen all of these films. One of them I've seen at least 25 times. It's one of my favorite God. Movies. I couldn't come up with it.
Okay, so
here we go. First one is from Jemele Hill.
Yep.
The quote is, "I'm sure you'd love to be free. Maybe go out and meet some Latin guy that can dance, grind up on you, make you feel dangerous, but also safe." Anyone?
Nope.
Nah.
Any guesses? Trey?
I'm seeing like... Rushmore in the stream team.
Okay.
But it's not Rushmore.
Oh, No idea.
I think Vince Vaughn said this line in the movie.
Swingers?
Old school?
No, you're getting warmer with old school.
What's that one with
Luke Wilson? Is
Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, Wedding Crashers.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Wow, that's a memorable line. I think the
idea is that it's supposed to be obscure, right? Because it's like you're supposed to come up with it instantly.
Okay.
The problem is, I'm a fan of that movie, but I didn't come up with it at all. Okay, here's another one. "I just bet my balls and shook on it." This is from Patton Oswalt. Now, this is an old movie.
Okay.
It's got Tom Hanks in it. It's one of his very, very, very early movies. No, earlier.
Oh, wow.
It might be his first movie off of Bosom Buddies.
Turner and Hooch?
No, it's a screwball sex comedy. Mm. Something you would not think that Tom Hanks... given his career since then, would be
right.
Splash?
Like it sounds like a Lloyd Bridges, like the what's that, Hot Shots or something like that.
I know you're thinking Top Shot.
Hot Shots.
I got no idea. What is it?
Okay, it's Bachelor Party.
Oh, gee, I don't even know what that movie is.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Nah.
What is that? It's obviously a Tom Hanks comedy when he was young.
It's a screwball comedy. He's got guy's about to get married, and he goes on his bachelor party, and shit gets crazy. That's it.
Oh, okay. Good.
But I've seen that movie. It couldn't come out. Is it good? I don't know. I haven't seen it since the 80s. So who knows? Next one, Wendell Pierce, the great Wendell Pierce, Bunk from The Wire. "What we have here is a failure to communicate." Now, this is a super famous line. It's super famous. I've seen this movie probably 10 times. Anything?
Full Metal Jacket?
It's,
No.
It's
a prison
film.
Sally? It's a prison film.
It's not Lethal Weapon. No. It's because it's in the Guns N' Roses song.
Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke. Very good. Very
nice.
Good.
Greg Sinnott in the stream team came through with help.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the last one. This is the movie that I've seen 25 times. I've seen this movie. I love this movie. It's from Will Arnett, "Sitting Down to Enjoy My Holiday." Anything.
I mean, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
And that's what I thought, actually, at first. No, it's a British sort of comedy. It's a cult classic, 1987.
Hot Fuzz?
No. Not Whitnail and I.
Yes, Whitnail and I.
Oh, Whitnail and I. That's a great movie. Yeah,
yeah, it's so good.
That's tough,
that's,
man.
What's his name? Hugh Laurie, is it? No, not Hugh Laurie.
Not Hugh Laurie. Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Anyway, I felt very stupid reading those.
Sure.
You guys got any lines you want to share?
Oh, I mean, so...
Test me.
Oh, okay. I've got one. Yeah,
go ahead, Lee. Go ahead.
Okay, well, this one's actually more for Skeets and JD. I don't think Trey's seen this movie, but I'm pretty sure... Skeets and JD have seen it. Okay. "Why would I shoot a guy, bang, and then stick him in a car and whiz him off to the hospital at 100 miles an hour? It defeats the purpose of having shot him in the first place."
Oh, man.
I mean, I must be the bloody only bloody standover man who provides a medical plan for some of these clowns.
Lock, stock, and...
No. You should know, Skids. We were talking about it not too long ago.
We were talking about this movie.
Yeah.
Is it British?
No, it's not British.
Oh.
But it's not American.
Oh, it's Australian.
Australian. Oh, Chopper.
Chopper. Yeah. There you go.
Never seen that.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen it? I thought you'd seen that.
No, I haven't. No.
I think you'd like it.
Trey, do you got one?
Dude, you got a tattoo. Dude, what's my tattoo say? Sweet. What about mine? Dude, what's mine say? Sweet. What about mine? Anybody know?
Oh, dude, where's my car?
There you go.
That part of that movie is hilarious the first time. If you see that when you're sick as a dog, man, that is so funny.
Oh, right.
Was that the one you had dysentery or something?
Yeah, in Damascus in Syria. That was the only movie it was on. It was on repeat all day. I was in the fetal position all day, and that came on, and I was like, I don't want to watch this
visual.
Movie.
What a visual. Oh, my God.
I simply have to watch it. Yes, I'm in.
All right. Well, you guys know my love of this movie, so maybe you'll just get it. Hollywood Mike Miranda makes his second dramatic exit of the day.
Oh, that's rad, baby.
That's Hell Track. Mike Miranda going down for the second time. Apparently... He was paid $500 for each time he fell when they shot the movie Rad. He was a real BMX rider. And he falls three times in Hell Track alone. So he made $1,500 right there. That's not a bad day's work for Hollywood Mike Miranda. Do you have one of your own, JD?
I don't.
No,
I don't.
Okay.
I put way too much time into this already.
So. I got one last little quick one. You should get this one, JD.
Yeah.
Leave the gun. Take the cannolis.
Oh, is that that's Godfather?
Yeah, Godfather.
Hey, let me do the most famous line from one of the most famous movies ever.
I forgot about that line. I was like, that's a great line.
Yeah. Hold on, I got one. Luke, I am your father.
Emperor's Face.
I loved Zach Harper's tweet on this. Welcome. To Jurassic Park.
I was legit dying. I thought it was so funny that's too. Great.
Yeah, all fans of that movie would recognize that right away.
Mm-hmm. All right, great one. I think that whole movie sort of tweet thing that you had there, JD, I think it was like the second iteration. I feel like there was a lyrics one going around first.
Oh, really? Oh,
like the first, what's the best? I don't know if it was best or something like the first line from a lyric that you would know the song right away.
Mm.
I think, unless I have it backwards and I just saw it backwards on my Twitter feed. But yeah, it was done like that thing too, where, you know, what do you call that?
This thing.
That board.
Yeah.
Cool. The marquee or something.
Awesome. That'll be my tweet next week.
Nice. Yes. Lee, what's your favorite opening line to a song?
To a song?
Yeah. The lyric, opening lyric to a song.
Is there a doctor in the house? Yeah, that's not the opening lyric, but you know, whenever Bon Jovi says that, you know what's coming next.
That's concert banter. That's not a lyric.
Yeah, but it's technically default. It's an opening lyric because it's like. Yeah.
Oh my God, this guy must have slept well, eh? Like last time.
Regularity is key, you know?
Yeah. Okay, pick 'em results. Wow, this show turned into a long show. We were making great time earlier, but
not anymore.
The rails, yeah. The game we had was Rockets Wizards. Wizards were favored by 1.5. Remember, we were coming into this one, or at least on yesterday's show. Is Westbrook playing? He doesn't usually play in back to back. Oh, Russ played. Played okay, too. Helped the Wizards get the victory. Beal out-dueling his ex-teammate John Wall. So the Wizards win. Tass and I got it right. We took Washington to win by 2 or more. So Tass is 5-6. I'm 6-5. Lee, you're 5-6 after the loss. And Trey is in last right now at 4-7. Tonight's game, guys. I think there's 6 games on in total. Denver-Boston. Nuggets on the road. Celtics have been reeling a little bit here, but they're favorite by 3.5. Trey, let's start with you. Who do you like in this one?
Nuggets have been playing pretty well. I think they're on a 3-game win streak right now, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And the Celtics are a little bit of a softy-wafty inside. So give me Denver.
Oh, okay. Denver getting points there, which is a little perplexing. Lee, where do you go with this one?
Yeah, this is tough because the Celtics have been stinking lately. But I think they're due to bounce back. Three and a half is maybe a point more than I would like, but I'll take the Celtics to win by four.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Lee. I'm only picking the Celtics here just because I think something's off with this line. What's going on? What do they know? What do they know that we don't know? So I'll take Boston to win by four or more, too. Though, like Trey said, I mean, Denver's playing better than Boston. So, bit of a strange one. Let's find out who Tass has.
Looks like there's some line movement on this one. I think people are putting their money on the Nuggets. So I'm going to take the Celtics because I like overthinking things.
Well, there you go. Tass and I sharing the same brain there with our thinking. So three of us taking Boston to win by four or more. Trey, the only one with the pre-swerve. You gotta feel pretty good about that, I think, actually.
I'll take it.
Yeah, well, so we'll see tonight. Again, six games on, TNT doubleheader. Enjoy those. We will be back tomorrow, of course, with The Daily Show. Well, Tass, what you need to know earlier in the day. Then The Daily Show at 10, live on YouTube, 10 a.m. Eastern. And then we got Beach Stepping tomorrow. So get your questions in for that. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Like, comment, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. We're on our way to 40K. So help us get there by sharing the show and making sure you help defeat the YouTube algorithm by liking and commenting and all the good stuff. Grab your No Dunks merch at NoDunks.com and subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. Go to TheAthletic.com/NoDunks. $3.99 a month some phenomenal writing. I mean, I shared like three or four Athletic bangers yesterday from just the NBA world, okay? I don't have a lot of time for the other sports going on right now. But man, just that alone, I'm like, look at this for $3.99 a month. And then, oh yeah, if you're obviously a soccer fan, if you're whatever, a fan of any other sport, you're getting also that. That's mind-boggling to me. So go check that out.
Get in now.
Yeah.
It helps support the show. It helps support The Athletic. And we got trade season coming right around the bend. Skeetsy, you're going to want that John Hollinger in your life.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. So theathletic.com/NoDunk. Sign up for your subscription. Go through that link. Helps us out. Helps, obviously, The Athletic out. So $3.99. That's nothing. That's peanuts. I know it's tough times at times for a lot of people right now. I get that. I get it. But, you know, if you don't have that coffee or if you don't order that one meal, you know, actually make your own food for once, then you can probably afford it. So good luck. Go get it. You're going to like it. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, what was Lee doing on Vooch Island? Watching every masterclass.
Embrace the day, people. You could stay.